Pour la semaine du 15 mai 26, CCS Showbiz Sandbox, le podcast qui vous apporte toutes les salités fait les manchettes partout dans le monde du divertissement. À Cannes, France, je suis J. Sperling Reich.
And in Birmingham, Alabama, I'm Michael Giltz.
Oh, I see. So you had to get the Southern accent going.
Well, I guess so.
I got my French accent going, and I really
sort
did
of.
Not, yeah. Right now, the country of France probably wants to deport me, frankly.
Well, they're certainly cringing. But happy birthday, Sperling.
Wait, what? Why is it my birthday?
Right. It's not your birthday, but it is the birthday of Pet Sounds from the Beach Boys and Blonde on Blonde by Bob Dylan on May 16th, 1966. Those two albums were both officially released in North America. Actually, Blonde on Blonde came out a few weeks later, but nobody knows exactly when, which is kind of weird. So all we have is the release date that's official. And it's kind of cool to think you would walk into a record store one day and find the two brand new albums, Pet Sounds by the Beach Boys, Blonde on Blonde by Bob Dylan. If you did, you might as well kill yourself because it's not going to get any better than that.
I wonder what you'd see if you walked into a record store today.
You'd say, my God, this is a smoothie shop.
Exactly. And in other news that happened 40 years ago.
Yes, exactly.
Actually, so, 50 now, isn't it? Like, 50, wait.
1966.
50. 50 yes, exactly.
Ago. Right. 2 weeks after I was born, Bob Dylan and the Beach Boys said, we got to celebrate.
Wow.
And that's my feeling. Okay. You know, make yourself happy today. Go out and listen to one or both of those albums.
Well, as you probably guessed, Michael, I'm a little busy these days.
Because, yes, you are.
Yeah. You know, and that's actually the reason I was trying. Notice I didn't say, you know, I was. I was trying to speak in French.
Oui, I did notice. So you're in France. You're covering Cannes. We're going to have sort of an abridged show. We're going to do most everything, but a little tighter, we hope. So what are we going to cover?
Well, on this week's show, we'll be taking a trip to the south of France for the Cannes Film Festival, which, of course, as I just mentioned, is presently underway. I'm here. We'll tell you which of the hundreds of films here are causing a stir, maybe touch on one or two that aren't, and mostly discuss all the business dealings going on at one of the world's most important annual film markets.
Of course, when you say we'll be taking a trip to the south of France, you mean you'll be taking a trip to the south of France.
Well, you're always invited, Michael, and of course, we miss you greatly here.
Yeah,
this
yeah,
year.
Yeah.
During Inside Baseball, we'll talk about, well, it's like an ongoing duel between Amazon and YouTube. I don't know if it's a duel between both of them, but Amazon is opening its video platform to users who can upload content and make more money off ads just like they do on YouTube. And YouTube is dreaming of selling its many customers a skinny bundle of TV channels just like Amazon and Hulu. And well, everyone else in the world who wants to do that, which is everybody. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll cover the week's top entertainment headlines, sort of. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on the weekend's box office.
Really, really flustered there in Cannes. A little too much wine in the morning.
I think it's just I am so exhausted.
I can imagine. Well, I'm exhausted, even though I didn't go to a drive-in double feature last night. That a double feature of Jungle Book and Zootopia, or Captain America and Winter War, The Huntsman. So you know which one I was going to go to. But I got busy, so I didn't do it. And so the number one movie of the world, no thanks to me, is Captain America Civil War. Another $150 million worldwide. It's at $940 million and counting quickly. It's obviously going to blow right past $1 billion. At number two, opening up internationally, is Angry Birds movie. The Angry Birds movie, a spinoff from that silly little game most everyone has played on their phone. $43 million in 74 territories. A good, strong start for this animated movie that cost $80 million to make.
And is getting very good reviews.
It's getting friendly reviews. Yes, absolutely. And number three is The Jungle Book, another family-friendly movie. $32 million over the weekend. $830 million worldwide. Have we gotten? No, we haven't gotten to the third one yet. I'll wait a second. At number four is a movie that opened in Cannes, Money Monster, starring George Clooney, directed by Jodie Foster. $20 million on opening weekend.
Yes, indeed. They were all here. Julia Roberts, first time ever in Cannes, by the way, for Julia Roberts, despite having films here before.
Oh.
George Clooney and Jodie Foster, they were all here. They walked the red carpet. I think, you know, people thought the film was harmless, maybe a little late. You know, it's a movie about Wall Street corruption. You know,
that's an evergreen.
Yeah, kind of. It's an evergreen. That's a good point.
Thank you. What did it feel like? Good positive buzz for them being there? Everybody, you said, they got some attention, or did it feel like, why are they here?
I kind of felt like, okay, so this is the Cannes Film Festival giving you the little bit of a star glitz that you expect to have every two or three days here, which is fine.
No harm, no foul.
That's correct. No, I mean, it was fine. It was a really competently made movie by Jodie Foster. And, you know, they love her here in France, Jodie Foster, and they love her here in Cannes.
As they do all over the world.
As they do all over the world. And so I was happy to see the film. I think everybody was happy to see the film and happy to see them here.
All right. At number five is The Wailing. This is a Korean thriller, sort of a mysterious thriller with a cop teaming up with a shaman. I think it's coming to Cannes, but it already opened up in South Korea. $16 million on its opening weekend, which is a big, big opening, one of the biggest of all time in South Korea, the biggest ever for Fox, I believe, Fox International. And number six is Neighbors 2, Sorority Rising, another movie that has opened up internationally. It comes here to North America in a week or two. It made $8.8 million over the weekend. It's at $20 million worldwide. It's a good start. The original Neighbors movie made a ton of money. That's the Zac Efron comedy. That cost $18 million to make. The sequel cost $35 million to make. So the budget doubled because they said, hey, you made a lot of money. You want to make another one, you're going to have to pay us.
Well, and it's funny that you call it a Zac Efron comedy because my good friend Seth Rogen calls it a Seth Rogen comedy.
He certainly does, as well he should. But it is a big year for Zac Efron. He had Dirty Grandpa. He has this. He has like two or three other movies coming out this year. He's got a big year. He's really going to become a bankable movie star if we don't watch out.
Or he hopes.
He's there.
Yeah.
At number seven is Criminal, the Kevin Costner movie, which made another $7 million over the weekend. It's at $26 million worldwide. At number eight, here's the third Disney film, Zootopia. It made another $7 million. It's at $970 million worldwide. It needs another $30 million to cross the $1 billion mark, obviously. According to the New York Times, they don't have any particular source for their estimate, but they say the budget is $150 million. Even if it's $175 or $200, they made good money here. Do studios care about this bragging rights? To me, I'm all excited. I want it to cross $1 billion. If I was Disney, I'd want it to cross $1 billion. Do they care?
Yeah, they care.
So what will they do to help
$1 billion? $1 billion, to give you some sense, it's become the new $100 million market.
Yeah, it really has.
Yeah, I mean, the joke is that every year at CinemaCon and before that, Show West, they'll have the State of the Industry address, and they will do a montage of all the movies that have made $100 million. You know, it's kind of like one of those.
Well, they don't do that anymore. Surely.
Clip packet. No, they do, and it's gotten longer and longer and longer and longer and longer because now every movie makes $100 million.
Yeah.
Well, and by the way, I should say I'm outside here in Cannes, France, on the patio overlooking the beach. So if you hear,
A beep.
Yeah, if you hear, an ambulance go by or a bird, a seagull. Yes. Well, that's what's going on.
It's a pity we don't do a video cast because then wouldn't it be exciting? So they do want it to cross $1 billion. I wonder if they'll re-release it a little bit later or nudge it forward or what they will do. It's obviously, you know, losing steam in North America. I mean, it's in the top 10 or 15. It made $2.8 million in North America and $4.7 million overseas. I don't know if it has Japan or any territory left to open in that's significant. It's now playing in 18 territories. It's damn close enough to $1 billion. You can say it's there anyway. But boy, I'm sure they'd like to have it happen.
I'm sure that they will. I'm sure they'll say that it made $1 billion.
Yeah, well, here's the deal. Disney, they have three movies in the United States and in the world, top 10.
Okay.
All three of them, basically, the end of today, Monday, will have grossed $300 million in North America. All three of them will have grossed $800 million worldwide. That was pointed out by Box Office Profits. They say that's never happened before in history.
Really?
I mean, it's not surprising. Almost no movies have made $800 million
worldwide.
Well, that's
true. That's true.
And $300 million in North America, and all in the same week in the top 10 from the same company.
Okay, so there's a lot of qualifiers on that, but yeah. Okay.
No, one company has three movies that at the same moment have grossed $300 million and $800 million worldwide.
Okay.
That's not much of a qualifier. It's not like family films with, you know, animals as the star. That's just one company has done this amazing feat. That's because they own Pixar, they own Marvel, they own Star Wars, and they own the Disney label.
Good point.
And, you know, I was poo-pooing them a week or two ago. This is our most extended discussion of the box office. I was saying, yeah. They say they think they've cracked the formula. They're never going to lose money. All their movies will be big hits.
You were joking around, I thought.
Yeah, we were joking around and teasing them that, yeah, you know, you're always going to have hits until you don't anymore. However, I feel like I'm thinking about this in the wrong way. I feel like Captain America, for example, is not a movie.
No, it's intellectual property. Captain America.
I know that. I know, but it's not a movie. I think it's really more like a TV series. It's an ongoing episode of a TV series.
Yeah, just a long. It's a long 2-hour
right,
special.
Because these are not you know, single standing movies by and large. There's an ongoing storyline in all these movies, whether it's the Avengers or Captain America. They all cross over to each other, and I think like they've launched a series.
Yeah,
just
absolutely
like you might
right.
launch The Walking Dead on TV or Games of Thrones. And for a number of years, you're going to have great ratings. You know, some episodes will be better than others, but you're going to have really big ratings for a while. And I feel like these movies, you know, we always say that for adults, the best movies are now on TV. You know, if you're an adult, you want to watch The Wire and Good Wife and Breaking Bad. And if you just want fun, the best TV shows are now in the theater. You know, they're not great like The A-Team or whatever, or The Mission Impossible, but they're fun. And they're just ongoing. And so when I keep thinking, gee, how can every single darn Marvel movie make money? Well, it's because it's like a TV show. They've launched it. People just go. You watch a new episode of The Walking Dead. You go see a new Marvel movie. Harry Potter was not a movie. The new Star Wars series is not a movie. It's a series. It's an ongoing string. Sometimes they're miniseries like Harry Potter with a particular beginning, middle, and end. Sometimes they just go on and on and on like Marvel, where they're introducing new characters like Ant-Man or Black Panther, or then they've got a big overarching episode or a crossover episode like Captain America. I just feel like there's a reason why this is working and why they're not going to drop the ball anytime soon, because I think we got to think about it in a different way. Does that make any sense at all?
Yes, it does. Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree.
I've been mocking them, and I'm going, you know what? Maybe I should stop mocking them, because I look at the list of Marvel movies coming up, and I think, I don't know which one of them's going to fail. I don't think any of them are.
Well, and we'll talk a little bit later about why it is studios are in this business of—
To make money?
Well, okay, no. What I mean is the business of these big, known intellectual properties.
Right, well, okay. And number 9 is Finding Mr. Right 2, a.k.a. Book of Love, another $5 million. We talked about it last weekend. It's $108 million worldwide. And number 10 is a horror flick, The Darkness. This is a string of horror flicks that all cost less than $5 million. This one stars Kevin Bacon, and it made $5 million on its opening weekend. And number 11, The Flop Huntsman, Winter's War. Number 12, Mother's Day, $38 million worldwide. We'll have to see how it does overseas. It's just started its campaign. And at number 13 is, I think this is the title, Who's Guilty for the Baby? Who's the father of this baby? The young
that's,
woman
that's,
has...
Yeah. Yeah.
Who's
yeah.
the father?
Who, yeah. Whose fault? Yes.
Yeah, whose fault is the baby? It's a comedy about an attractive young woman. She has a one-night stand. She figures out who the young man is. He's attractive too. They're thrown together by their families, and you won't be surprised to find they actually fall in love.
Wait a second. Do hijinks ensue?
The hijinks do ensue, and then romance.
Okay. Well, you know, you got to have a little romance with your hijinks.
Those are the biggest movies worldwide. The biggest movie on its per screen average, at least in North America, is The Lobster, the Colin Farrell film, which opened on 4 screens and made $46,000 on each screen. Our in-house cineast, Aaron Rich, loved it. I'm looking forward to checking it out. That was a con a year or two ago, wasn't it?
It was just last year, and I liked it when it was in Cannes. We talked about it last year. You know, it was one of those films where it kind of lost its way a little bit toward the end, but, you know, overall, it's a film you'll remember 100%. Yeah, I mean, a year later, I still remember that movie, whereas Sea of Trees, which was also here last year, the Gus Van Sant film starring Matthew McConaughey, I actually had to go back and look up what that movie was about because I completely forgot it. I had completely blocked it out of my mind.
So we've dived into Cannes. So rather than a rundown of every darn movie in the world, are there any movies that you've seen so far that you think will be among your best of the year?
Well, Tony Erdmann, without a doubt. This is the, and this may be the only time in life you'll hear me say this, the 3-hour German comedy. Okay. It's 2 hours and 42 minutes.
Oh, it's a comedy.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of
I thought that was a mistake on IMDb.
No. It's like a dramatic comedy. So one could say a dramedy. It's a father daughter comedy. It's about a woman. And, you know, I should have had all of my notes here.
It's a father reconnecting with his daughter. It's written and directed by Maren Ade, who is a German producer. She's done a lot of good work.
Maren Ade.
Thank you.
Yes.
Maren Ade. And it's rave reviews from everyone.
Yeah, it stars Sandra Uller as the daughter and this father who is kind of like a goofball, who's a practical joker. And she's this, you know, kind of a straight-laced daughter who's a management consultant. And he goes to visit her in Bucharest and what occurs. I mean, this is a movie where every single moment you have no idea what's going to happen, and it never takes the path you think it's going to take.
Is it commercial or is it a festival hit?
It is absolutely commercial. I could see this film actually doing well worldwide because it, I mean, there were moments where people were applauding in the middle of the movie. I mean, I'm not going to tell you what happens because each thing that, each next step that occurs is funny, unexpected, and it's the surprise of what happens that makes it that way.
Well, it's a good sign for female directors at Cannes when they're having good success stories. This one is probably more of a festival hit than an actual commercial hit, but it's American Honey, starring Shia LaBeouf, and it's directed by one of the best directors of the last decade or so, Andrea Arnold from the UK. It's about teenagers in America who are sort of a young people who are sort of heading off on the road to sell magazine subscriptions. Talk about a empty, pointless exercise trying to sell magazines. Who the heck buys magazines anymore? People used to go door to door and try to sell magazine subscriptions. The idea that they're still trying to do that is a little mind-boggling. This is a really long, odd movie with virtually no plot.
Yeah, I got to tell you. Okay, first of all, you say who does that anymore? About a month ago, there was a knock at my door. Who's
Seriously?
Standing there? Two people who obviously did not belong in the neighborhood. Okay, they were very young. They just didn't. I didn't recognize them at all. I knew they were not from around where I lived. And they were trying to sell me magazines with the same types of stories and tricks that you know, occurred in this movie, American Honey. This movie is long. And I mean, and like,
it's like 2 hours and 40 minutes long and no plot. That's the problem. Tony Erdman is 3 hours and has lots of plot. But some people love this movie. You were not as big a fan. Some people loved it. It's fun to see Shia LaBeouf playing a crazy nutty role, sort of back in the swim of things. Hopefully he's a little more stable or ending his art house art concept hijinks.
Is most of the teens or 20-year-olds in this film are all first-time actors. They're not actors. She just cast them because that's who they are. So Arnold said, okay, this is who you are in real life. That's who you're going to be in the film. And they're kind of like inner city, kind of rough and tumble youngsters. And given that that's the way Arnold casts their movies, here she's got Shia LaBeouf basically playing, well, what Shia LaBeouf would be if he wasn't an actor.
So that's gotten some very good reviews, though it's unlikely to become a big commercial force. And then one other movie that I've spotted from afar is getting great reviews is the Ken Loach film, I, Daniel Blake. He retired, and then he makes another movie, and it's one of the best of his career.
Well, yeah, okay. First of all, this is one of the more accessible Ken Loach films. Of course, Ken Loach is considered a leftist filmmaker. He's a socialist filmmaker. He's always...
Or by most people in the world, just a good filmmaker.
Well, no, meaning that, yes, he is I happen to like his movies a lot. I like Paul Laverty a lot. I can see why people say, oh, his movies are preachy. And that's kind of why I went down the, oh, people call him a socialist filmmaker or, a leftist filmmaker, because they always have some kind of social commentary, or more often than not do. And in this case, it was commenting on the kind of social welfare state in the United Kingdom and how it kind of doesn't work. And it's, you know, the bureaucratic red tape just to get something done.
It's about a middle-aged carpenter who injures himself and has to go on welfare, and he hooks up with a woman who's also in sort of the same boat, and it tells their story.
Correct.
It's not an essay. It's a story about people.
Yes, absolutely.
And any political science major would tell you every movie has social context and political commentary, whether they mean to or not.
That's correct. And there are some, it's a solid movie.
Solid? I thought you gave it like an A-.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I could
see... That's not solid. That's one of the best movies of the year. Is it or is it not one of the best movies of the year? Not for you.
It probably won't be for me, but it is a very good movie that has moments of melodrama.
Are there any other movies you saw that you think will be on your list of the best of the year? I just want to know what your standout great movies were. We know it's Tony Erdman. What else you got?
I really liked Jim Jarmusch's Patterson, about a poet writing bus driver played by Adam Driver.
And his hair?
His hair was short, Adam Driver's hair.
Okay.
And it's just one of those very slow-paced but yet thoughtful.
Jim Jarmuschian.
Yes, the foreign, I should say at least the French critics that I spoke with hated it. And I just thought they called it...
Really? It seems like it would be up their alley.
Exactly. Somebody said if this film were in French, it would win the César. You know, the French equivalent of the Academy Award. What I think is interesting is they all said, oh, it's like a hipster movie. And I thought, yeah, you know, Jim Jarmusch invented that, right? He invented the hipster movie.
Okay, so there's lots of cool movies. There's Loving from Jeff Nichols about the interracial couple, which took their fight to be married all the way to the Supreme Court. There's Hell or High Water, which got some good reviews from the trade, starring Chris Pine and a nice, fun crime drama. But I want to know, what's it like? I'm not there. What's the experience like? How's it going for the press?
Well, for the press this year, I mean, there seems to be as many members of the press as there have been in past years. Same familiar faces, of course, and some that are missing, like yours. But, you know, because of the fear of terrorism, it's tough to get around. And, you know, your bags are checked constantly.
Are they checked better or something?
Let's put it this way. As you know, Michael, I am the éclair. Morning Eclair man at the 8:30 a.m. screenings, because all the screenings of competition films are at 8:30 in the morning and 7 o'clock at night. There's a few scattered in between, but mostly they're in the morning and night, and I sneak my Eclair in. Now, first of all, the boulangerie where I bought that Eclair is now shut down, okay?
Oh.
So that's a sad little fact, but the entrances to all these theaters look like the checkpoints at airports, because they have all these water bottles and sandwiches, and you can't bring anything through.
Oh, I see. They got you.
Yeah, which is a little disheartening, because, of course, you are running from event to event to event, and you're doing your work like we're doing right now, and you don't have time to eat. You don't have time to drink. And, you know, you do get worn down. And so I could see, okay, you can't bring Coca-Cola in, or you can't bring coffee in. I could see that. Water, I get they don't want to be picking up after you, but there really is no security threat. I know they believe there is. There isn't.
Well, they don't know what the liquid is, I guess.
Exactly. And I get it. But it's just a little kind of, you know, I don't know.
All right. So it's a bit of a pain, but it's basically the same. The number of presses the same.
Yeah. And you'd expect it to be a bit of a pain because of that, just like in the airports.
And your badge? What badge did you get?
Pink. So there's different layers of badges, yellow being on the bottom, white being on the top, and pink with a yellow dot, or
don't forget blue.
Rose avec pastel jaune. And there's blue, right? And I got rose. So right there in the upper middle class, so to speak.
You know, you're doing great. A pink is great.
Yes, I got in to see Postman, listen to me, Patterson, which a lot of blues did not. And they stand in that different line. So this year, the rose passes are all standing where the blues used to stand, and the blues are standing where the rose used to stand, because they are separating the lines. And, you know, there's
so they don't have to look at badges, they just say,
well, they do look at them still, of course, and they search the bags, and they then wand you to make sure you could get anything in. If you really tried, you can get anything in. But at the same time, I wonder, gee, you're doing all of this to us who, let's face it, we're in and out of here. You're scanning our badges every 5 seconds. You know our every step. And yet you haven't closed down the Croisette, so somebody could drive a truck right up to the Palais and just, you know, do whatever they wanted. They could set off, you know, look at what happened in Oklahoma City, 20 years ago. The same thing could happen here. They haven't closed the Croisette, and I understand why. You know, it's a thoroughfare.
Are they supposed to?
Well, no. I mean, they've half closed it, but you can still drive a truck down it. And the Croisette, for those who don't know, the Croisette is the street that...
It's the main drag.
Yeah, that runs down the beach all the way to the Palais.
And some company brilliantly decided to arrange a stunt where they would have guys in a boat looking like they're armed paratroopers come storming from the beach in a boat onto the deck of a hotel.
Hotel du Cap, in fact, I believe.
Sending a few patrons sort of running a little scared towards the swimming pool area, going, what the hell's going on? Like, oh, it was all in good fun for a stunt. They cleared it with the police and all this stuff as far as the water. I don't know who cleared them having weapons coming storming into a hotel, but there you go. Not a good idea.
Yeah, and, you know, it's there's so much is going on here that I didn't even know that had occurred, okay?
Right, it's not that big a deal, but it was kind of stupid.
Yes, and
you know,
to give you some sense of what it's like here, Woody Allen's film Cafe Society opened the festival this year. A solid film being released by Amazon Studios. And
solid would be a big accomplishment for him, is it really?
Yeah, it's a pretty good movie. Yeah, I mean, it was, you know.
It's been a while since he's had a solid film.
Well, Midnight in Paris. Did you like Midnight in Paris?
That's not that solid. No,
okay,
not really.
Well, then you're not going to like this movie.
No,
but
it's not good.
It was shot by Vittorio Storaro, but that feels like a million years ago. Now, when Woody Allen was walked the red carpet, was in the Grand Theater Lumiere, or the big Palais Theater there. The MC of the opening night made a joke.
He made a rape joke. He made a Roman Polanski joke.
Yeah.
He said, you're here making movies in Europe, and you didn't even rape anybody.
Right, and that was a joke about Roman Polanski.
People took it as a joke about him molesting his child, or the
accusation.
That is his biological child, right?
Yes.
Yes.
The accusations that had been leveled against him for, again, 20 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said later he didn't care. He didn't, comedians.
I'm sure he was thrilled.
But, that feels like it happened last year at this point.
Well, that's what happens when you're at a festival or a business convention or whatever. Yes, it's exhausting, and every day feels jam-packed. So what are the big stories that you're talking about? I mean, there's always big business deals or trends. What is getting traction on the Quasar?
Well, I just mentioned that Amazon Studios is producing and they're not releasing, they're going through different distributors to release all these movies like Lionsgate and Roadside Attractions and I can't remember.
They're making sure their movies get a proper distribution before they premiere on Amazon, unlike Netflix.
Correct. But they are here in Cannes, and they have Cafe Society, they had Patterson, they have The Handmaid's, The Handmaiden, actually. I almost said The Handmaid's Tale. But
is that it's not the Margaret Atwood.
No, it's Park Chan-wook, a Korean film that was very, very good, an erotic thriller. And so there are these new buyers in town, the Netflixes of the world, the Amazons of the world.
There are always new buyers in town.
Yeah, but these are people who are spending a lot of money. Actually,
and there are always new buyers with deep pockets, right?
There haven't been for a while.
Hollywood is always welcoming new sources of income.
Yes, there haven't been, certainly not to the tune of what Amazon and Netflix are bringing to the table. That said,
China?
Again, they were producing films rather than buying them.
Okay.
More and more now what's happening, certainly there's always been what's the festival pickup, the festival acquisition, where the movie's made, it's screened, and then somebody buys it here at the market.
You got to get involved at the script stage. You got to get involved at the idea stage now.
Right, because more and more it's, okay, what is not just the next year, but what are the next 2 years look like? And how do we stagger our releases? And how do we kind of get a full slate of products in the pipeline? So we're at that stage again. At some point it will go backwards, and it will more than likely be, just buy the finished product. But right now we're at the buy the script, buy the film that's in post-production, buy the packaged movie, and you're hearing a lot about that. You're also hearing a lot about day and date releases and theatrical releasing.
For the smaller films that are at Cannes?
Yeah, yes, because here's the thing.
I would not think Tony Erdmann, they're talking about day and date.
No.
And by that, you mean around the world and stuff.
Correct, yes. And
Daniel Blake, American Honey, Sierra Nevada, The Handmaiden, Patterson, Loving, Hell or High Water, none of these are going to be day and date worldwide.
American Honey might.
I mean, really?
Because it does not have a broad appeal. And
do you mean day and date in multiple territories, or do you mean day and date on demand?
On demand. That's what I'm referring to.
Oh, I thought you meant worldwide. Oh, okay.
No. This is.
But I thought you were arguing that trend was trending away.
It is.
That's
exactly what I'm arguing. For some films, though, there is a belief that, okay, it might make sense, like an American Honey, because it's not going to play wide anyway. And it's very difficult to get attention on iTunes or Netflix or any of these platforms.
So why not get the best bang for your buck? In that case, you think we're going to have reviews for a week. And attention for a week, we might as well make it available to everyone during that week.
Yes, and Ted Hope mentioned that at a seminar. Ted Hope is the head of Amazon Studios production. And he kind of said, you know, you've got this platform right now, you should kind of use it.
And the difference is with Tony Erdmann or Daniel Blake, you expect really good reviews and good word of mouth. So you expect it to play and play for a while. You think you can platform it, or you think you can move it around, or you think you can gain attention over the weeks and months because it's a really good movie.
Right. And likewise, the reverse of that is true. So you can have, if you look at Sea of Trees last year, Lionsgate bought it. The very next day it screened in Cannes, was universally booed, and they are not releasing it anymore. It still hasn't been released, and it looks like The Orchard or A24, I can't remember who's handling it. I think it's The Orchard, but a smaller distributor is now handling it, and whether they make their money back, who knows. But there was Ted Hope was speaking at a conference that was at put on by the European Observatory, and this is kind of a trade group that does a lot of research. And they were trying to answer the question, what makes European films travel? How can you export the movies you're making so that they can make more money, that more people can see them, that you can make more movies? And here's what they have come down to. And it was kind of when the
make them like Hollywood.
Oh, yeah. When the research analyst said this, he said he kind of went through each step, you know, each one of these bullet points one by one. And he said, first of all, you need big budget productions over $10 million. Okay. They really need to win some awards, especially at festivals. Okay. They need to be in the English language.
This is a guy who I would immediately stop listening to.
Well, realize that he is presenting these as, you know, the facts that he has found. Okay. So
that's right. That's why I would stop listening to him.
They need to come from the UK or France. Dramatic films do better. Because, of course, comedy is hard to travel.
Tell it to Tony Erdman.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Keep going.
They should be based on already familiar cultural content like books or, say, comic books. They need to be produced as international co-productions, kind of like every single movie these days. They need to be handled by a sales agent. Okay. So, well, except for studio movies.
Is this person joking?
And distributed by a U.S. major. And when he got done with that, he realized, you know, exactly what you said. Like, okay, yes, I just described Hollywood. But, you know, yes.
And that's a terrible formula for making distinctive great movies that will travel well. Tony Erdman fits none of that.
Well, no, it does. And here's how it fits it, okay? So if you really want to look at it.
Is it in English? Is it a big budget? Is it UK or French? Is it based on already familiar cultural content? No.
Okay, so let's
start. Handled by a sales agent. I mean, for every movie is. Award-winning, every movie hopes to be. So, I mean, it's just stupid.
Well, let's start looking at this. Big budget? Yes, it had a big budget. It was probably
What's its budget?
It's probably over $10 million.
That's not a big budget.
Well, no, mind you, they were considering big budget over $10 million.
That's not a big budget. That's why it's a stupid comment.
Well,
that's a stupid comment. It must not be a student film is what they're saying.
No, it must not cost $3 million is what they're saying.
Yes, it must not be a student film made by a kid who hopes to go to Sundance. $10 million is not a big budget movie.
Yes,
Tony Erdman is not a big budget movie by any standard, and so it's stupid to describe. It must be a big budget movie over $50. That's not a definition of a big budget. That's why it's a stupid comment.
Well, okay. And you're saying that, and...
And he's wrong.
Well, here's the deal.
The whole world says that.
Well, okay. And what the whole world would say when they write to dirt@showbizsandbox.com, which I know they will do after you make a comment like that, is they'd say, okay, let's look at some of the movies that are made. Let's look at all the movies that are made. Forget about the ones in maybe Nigeria, which are made for like $200,000 or $100,000, or India that are made for $2 million. But if you look at the movies that are coming out of Europe, which is, again, this was the European Observatory, the films that are being made here are usually in the budget range of $3 to $10 million. The ones that are exported and do well are over $10 million. There aren't that many movies that are made for $70 million, $80 million in Europe that would be considered big budget.
I think it's stupid to say they should even be $10 million. It's not a big budget, nor is it a formula for making a successful movie that crosses over. I don't think there's anything wrong with a movie costing $3 or $5 or $8 million. In Europe, if you're making a movie in Iran, of course it's not going to cost $80 million. Of course it's not going to cost $10 million. That doesn't mean it's not going to travel or that you're failing to match the formula. My whole point is a $5 million film from Iran is not, oh, well, give up because it's not going to work.
No. No, they're saying that
this
is statistics.
It must cost $10 million or more. That's wrong.
Again, this is statistics.
No, it's not.
And
it's his opinion.
Context. No, it's not opinion. It's basically, here are the numbers.
Don't make movies except in English. That is an opinion.
And by the way, you asked about Tony Erdman. Okay. Big budget.
I don't know what the budget is. I'm trying to look it up. What is the budget?
I think it was $12 million.
All right. Yeah.
So what they're considering a $10 million plus budget, which they're calling big budget. Okay. Award winning, not yet because it just premiered.
It will.
English language, yes. Okay. Parts of it are in English. English and German.
No, if it's not parts, is it mostly in English?
I would say probably 30%.
Really? Well, that's a lot. Still not in English. Subtitles. 70% of the movie is subtitles. That's not in English.
Dramatic film? Well, it's drama comedy. So it's got, you know, it's a 50-50 split
you're
there.
You're just listing stupid details and saying, well, look, it matches the formula. Half of them are here. Well, don't all of them have to be there? It's a stupid, stupid thing to say. Everything about this is stupid. That you do not make movies that transcend the world by going to a formula, ever. Nor do you make distinctive German
or Swiss or Iranian films that are going to
make money by following a formula. You don't do it.
Well, that's a different conversation. What this person was saying was Here's
so if
history.
You look at the past few,
here's history. Right, correct. That's what this person was saying, and that's what the European Observatory was saying, is this is history. This is what we've seen, okay? They were not saying, here's how to make movies in the future.
Of course they were.
He was joking around by saying all of this because it's kind of funny that when you say that, of course, we're talking about Hollywood. You know, that they should come from the UK or France maybe is the only one that you could kind of strike from that, from those bullet points. But, you know, he was kind of talking about big budget Hollywood movies when at the end of the day, again, that's like filmmaking by the numbers, and it never works.
I mean, I don't know. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Life is Beautiful, Hero, Pan's Labyrinth, Instructions Not Included. You know, I mean, Amelie, I guess, is big budget.
Yeah, when was Amelie? 2001, right? 2001.
Yeah, like Water for Chocolate, La Cage aux Folles. I guess it's French. Does that mean it counts? Because it doesn't fit anything else. It's not a drama. It's not award-winning.
Again,
it's
going by 2014 numbers, 2014, 2015 numbers.
Okay, so if you look at 1 year's releases, again, you're just stupid. If you look at 1 year's releases
actually,
of movies,
I take
decide,
it back.
This is the formula. You're stupid.
I take it back.
The motorcycle. I'm listing the most
2011.
Popular...
I'm looking at it now. 2011 to 2015. Those were the numbers
that's
being
still
used.
Still short. The Motorcycle Diaries, Kung Fu Hustle, Iron Monkey, Monsoon Wedding, Y Tu Mama Tambien, Volver, all of Spain is gone. Forget Almodovar. Under the Same Moon, Cinema Paradiso, Das Boot. I guess Das
okay,
Boot
you,
is,
how,
is big
how far,
budget.
How far back did you just go?
I'm looking at the list of the top grossing foreign language films of all time. Why the hell would I not? If you want to know what movies have succeeded historically, why would you look at the last 2 years? This guy's an idiot. All these
well,
movies,
because you know what, actually, Michael,
fit,
I totally
listen,
disagree with you because you know what,
when Das Boot was, formula.
You know what, Michael, here's the deal. When Das Boot was released, okay,
oh, don't point
there was
on
no
that.
Netflix.
I listed 20, stop, ignore Das Boot. I listed 20
okay.
other movies.
Cinema Paradiso, Amelie. DVDs barely existed when Amelie was released.
What's that got to do with anything?
You're basically
you're
trying to compare.
Nothing. I'm saying historically and into the future, formulas like this don't work. They're stupid. You look at what, you know, it's got to have this, that, and the other. There's four. If you do these five things, that'll work. That's stupid. How can you not think that's stupid?
Well, you
say
know what? I'm just going to tell you that.
You're making European movies. They better be in English. How is that not stupid?
Well, that was the point that he was joking around about.
No, it's not a joke. It's in your list of the what you must do. You must be in English. You're French, you're German, you're Spanish. You want to make a movie that's going to make money, make it in English. That is stupid.
Well, okay, I'm going to tell you about all the billion-dollar Turkish films that are being released this year. There aren't any. It's a shame.
There aren't any except from Hollywood. None exist from Hollywood. If that's your standard of success, you're an idiot again.
Okay, how about $100 million Turkish movie?
You're not making – that's not the game you're playing. If you're not making $200 million movies, you're probably not going to gross $1 billion. That doesn't happen. So you're not playing that game. What game are you playing? When you're talking about $15 million budget, you're not in the world where you're going to gross $1 billion, and that can't be your standard. Are you going to make money, and are you going to make successful movies? That's what you want to do, not lose money and make good movies. That is the standard.
Well, at
not
the end of the day,
gross $500 million.
At the end of the day, the best way to make money while making a movie is to have a good story, okay? Everybody will tell you that.
In English.
But when you're talking about, I'm saying a good story and making money, it doesn't matter how much money.
Of
but
course.
For it to be profitable.
That's a more intelligent comment than anything he's listed.
Okay.
Make a good
And this
movie.
Is the European Observatory. I don't know why we keep calling the European Observatory he. It was a gentleman that was presenting it. Now, that said, in business, when you go back 15 years and start talking about products being released during a different time frame with different with a different set of you know market criteria, that never works. So that is why you can't go back to 2000 and Amelie and say, oh, gee, well, that made money. Well, yeah, okay, different time entirely.
If you're in Germany saying you should make movies that cost at least $10 to $15 million and are in English, that's your formula for success. That strikes me as kind of stupid. I don't see how you can think it's not. You're in Germany? Well, you better make your movies in English.
No.
Okay, and then they better be in English.
I would say...
And they should be award-winning. How stupid... Stupid comments. Make movies that are really critically successful. Well, thank you. There's a great idea. Make a movie that wins a César. Well, duh. Who doesn't want to make movies that win awards? These are stupid comments. I'm sorry,
but the
I'm
reality
done.
Is
let's stop talking about it. It's
well,
stupid.
part of the issue
too
is
too much time on this moron. He's a moron.
Well, this
it's
is
stupid.
The European Observatory.
Well, they're morons. It's stupid. How could you not? How could you sit in a panel and not go? What a waste of time this was. It should be in English, and it should cost a lot of money and win lots of awards. Brilliant. Brilliant. You want to make an album that's going to make a lot of money, sell a lot of copies? Make sure you win the Grammy for Best Album of the Year. Make it in English. Duh. Yes, that will help. If you win the Album of the Year award and are in English, you're more likely to sell a lot of copies of your album. Thank you very much. Good night.
Well, that is okay. Stupid. Well, if you want to move
that's
on.
Stupid. Make videos you, for your songs.
You know, Michael, the only person not moving on here is you. So
I said move on.
Yeah. So what I'm going to say is part of the reason that this was being
on.
Brought up, and I am moving on, is because what really is being discussed here is how attention is so difficult to capture these days because of all of the myriad of distractions, whether it's your smartphone or your iPad.
Yeah, we know.
And
we
that's
know,
something
we
that's
know,
been
we
discussed.
Know. It's hard to get attention for movies. We know. We all know. Everybody listening to this show knows that. You sound like that guy. Yes, we all know it's hard to get you, especially there's thousands of movies being released. There's 1,000 movies that got released in North America this year. Got a commercial release in New York City. Over 1,000. That's 3 a day. It's very hard to get attention.
It's also hard to get consumers to actually make a decision that causes friction, that has friction in it. You could stay home and with very little friction, watch a movie that's streaming. Or you could get in your car, park, go and see a movie in the theater.
That's work. It's working. People in North America set a record box office. Ticket sales are trending with population. We've seen a steady growth for the last 40 years in movie attendance because the population is growing. They continue to go to movies every week, and we have record box office, despite the fact that they can, as you say, access almost any movie in history at the tip of their fingers. So that's a success story. It is not falling apart. People continue to go to movies, and as we've seen, box office continues to grow along with the population. It's doing great.
There is some concern about theatrical and how you
then
can
not
recoup
paying attention.
Theatrically. That is, look, I am reporting what the conversations are here. Okay? So if you want
yes,
to.
Yes, people always say that people are not going to go to the movies, except if you look over 40, they say, oh, this year was down from last year, and therefore it's a disaster, rather than saying every year can't be the biggest year of all time. And if you look at the overall trends for the last 40 years, you see a steady upward tick in both attendance, because the population is growing, and in box office. We just had a record year last year, $11 billion in North America. Who would look at that and say, uh-oh, we're in trouble?
Well, I think, again, they wouldn't just look at money.
What else are they going to look at?
I don't know. They would actually see whether their customer base is growing or shrinking.
And it's doing just fine. They're making more off movies now than they ever have before in history. Is that not true?
No, that is absolutely 100% true. They're making it from more people just in different territories.
Uh-huh. Great. They've grown the worldwide box office. That's a positive. And North America, which is the most mature market, I guess, in some ways, hit a record high last year. Not in attendance, but in box office grosses. And attendance is just fine. It didn't fall off a cliff.
Yeah. What a lot of industry pundits and even the studios are saying is, look, it's flat. It didn't go down, which is better than it going down. So we'd rather have flat than a decrease.
Again, if you look at this year compared to last year, it's basically about the same. Uh-oh, tons of people went to the movies and we made $11 million. Really?
11 million? I think it was more like
11
billion.
11 billion.
Yeah. Billion. Yeah. And I think it was like 11.4. Was it 11.4?
They've been saying the sky is falling every time the box office doesn't hit a record high in grosses and in theatrical admissions. And this year, they say it even when it does hit a record high. The highest grossing year of all time, and you're telling me they're worried about the attendance?
They're worried about theatrical in certain territories.
Well, sure, it's worldwide.
And frankly, how to continue distributing their product, because that's what this is, how to best distribute their product and make it commercially viable in the current market.
And anything interesting come up?
Frankly, again, that it used to be that you could actually let films play out over like 4 weeks, 6 weeks, 7 weeks, 8 weeks. Now there's like a 2 week, there seems to be this like 2 week, like how can we get people in this 2 weeks to make the decision that whether it's in this 2 weeks or within 4 weeks, they're going to see this particular movie in a cinema and not wait for it to come out.
I don't know. Jungle Book is the number two movie in the country in North America.
And that's a great example of...
It's been out for 5 weeks. Zootopia has been out for 11 weeks. It's the number six. It's down now, only making a couple million dollars, but it's had great legs.
And how do you get Tony Erdman to that point? And maybe not as successful as, say, The Jungle Book, which has, you know...
Of course not.
$150 million worth of special effects, but to one where it makes $20 million in the United States.
I mean, Batman versus Superman has been in theaters for 8 weeks. My Big Fat Greek Wedding for 8 weeks. I mean, you've got a small film starring starring Oscar winner Sally Field. Hello, my name is Doris. It's been in theaters for 10 weeks. It's on 250 screens. Looks like it always has to me. Deadpool is still in theaters. It's out on digital, and it's out on DVD, and it's 14 weeks after it opened, and it's still playing. And yeah, your movie will crash and burn in a weekend if it's not good. It's true. You can't trick people into seeing bad movies anymore. That does not happen. And they will know it within hours rather than a week or two or three.
Yeah,
so that
the
is
other
true.
Thing-
you cannot buy ads and just trick people into going to a movie anymore. It's not working. It's, people still go see bad movies. Batman versus Superman made, you know, $900 million or whatever. So, you know, you can still get attention and make a big movie out of something that's not great. But yeah, when it's really bad, people run away.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that some of the distributors and acquisitions executives I've spoken to here in Cannes have said is that, you know, the Rotten Tomatoes effect is that nobody's even reading reviews anymore. They just go to Rotten Tomatoes and read the capsules.
Nobody really read reviews anyway. They looked at the stars. They read the first graph.
Right.
You know, the people who studied reviews were few and far between. I was one of them, but, you know, come on. People did not study reviews. I wish, you know, but the one when reviews became really more important than ever was when they were on TV from Siskel and Ebert. That's
yes.
when people started to really pay attention, and that drove them nuts. Oh, no, if those two guys didn't give a thumbs up, they were in trouble.
That's
you
true.
Know?
Yes.
Yeah. So are you having fun?
You know, it's a lot of work, but I never complain when I come to Canada. You get no sleep. You are constantly writing, constantly working, constantly, you know, on email. And I'll tell you that the smartphone has really, I want to say it's revolutionized the way you can cover this festival, but it's really made it so that you're always connected.
How can you use your smartphone when you're in Cannes? Did you buy a local chip?
Yes, you buy a local SIM card. They finally made it affordable and accessible to do so.
You used to have to buy a local phone.
Yes, that's
and buy a SIM card for that.
Right, precisely, and that is a great example of changing market circumstances.
Yes, now I'll go see Tony Erdmann. I have a SIM card in my iPhone. You're just glad I'm not there.
Well, we do miss you at La Pizza, Michael. And really, I guess maybe we should. This was supposed to be the short show. This was the short show. Okay. Well,
until you told me all German, French, and Spanish and Russian films should be in English.
What about
That's
Romanian?
Your secret to success.
What about Romanian? The
no,
3-hour Romanian
remain
movie.
3 hours with one camera shot.
Yeah, well, that's okay. So there were more than one camera shot in Sierra Nevada. I still don't know why the title of Christy Pugh's movie is Sierra Nevada, but it took place in like one apartment practically, and the camera just kind of rotated most of the time. And the whole time, it's a 3-hour movie. On the first night, all subtitles, all talking, all dialogue. Stephen Garrett, as you know from Jump Cut, he cuts trailers. We were sitting in the Debussy Theater, starving, and the whole time the main character is trying to eat. And we were just like, oh, can we just go to La Pizza?
Was it good?
You know, it's one of those movies that you walk out of going, oh, that was so frustrating and I hated it. And then like 3 days later, you're like, oh gosh, I'm still thinking about it.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's one of those movies. But hey, you know what? We should probably move on from Cannes into Big Deal or Big Whoop, which of course is always the weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. We're really not going to do it this week, but Michael,
have time, do we?
Well, we don't have, you know, we don't.
Here are the stories we were going to cover. Millennials get a majority of their TV via streaming.
Yes.
I'm not sure about that. I'm not sure how. I mean, that seems a little rushed. I'm sure it's North America, and it seems a little rushed. I'm not sure I quite buy it. I'm sure it's a survey. You couldn't actually know this, but it seems a little ahead. And unless if you're defining them as 18 to 24, well, then they probably are because they're in college or they're, you know, they haven't bought their cable package yet or their, you know, satellite dish. So it may be true, I guess, to a degree. But they watch a lot of TV, so I'm not sure. But yeah, if you're 18 to 24, you don't have a cable package yet, you're in a dorm room, yeah, maybe you are streaming mostly.
Yeah, you know, even Jim Jarmusch, who has a film here in Cannes, as I mentioned, Patterson, I asked him, you know, in his film, the couple goes to a movie, and one of the woman in the couple says, "Oh, this is so nice. It's like we're living in the 20th century," and it was kind of a funny little moment. But I asked him, I said, "Do you really think going to the movies is 20th century?" And he said he loves cinema and he loves going into a darkened theater, and he's not sure that will ever go away. But you know, he'll get cinema any way he can, including streaming on a digital device if that's necessary.
Well, I think, you know, it's a big deal as far as a change in trend, but it doesn't really matter. It's like saying, oh, no, they're getting them via cable rather than rabbit ears, or they're getting them via satellite versus cable, or they're getting them via streaming. Who cares? It's just a pipe. It doesn't matter how they get it, as long as they're watching it. A fan suggested online that Elsa from the movie Frozen get a girlfriend in the sequel. They just said, oh, I love this movie. Some fans see it as empowering, of course, the character, and some see it as a coming out parable. And she said, oh, it would be awesome if Elsa got a girlfriend. And she put a hashtag and put that on Twitter, and the religious right freaked out, which is, they way overreacted as if Disney was about to make Elsa a butch, like lesbian or something. It's just like, for God's sakes, people, some kid posted something on Twitter. Why are you acting like the world is coming to an end?
And I see that Aaron Rich, one of our listeners, sent that in to us.
That's right. He loved The Lobster, and he thought it was hilarious that they got so uptight about somebody posting something on Twitter. Well, in the UK, speaking of streaming, people spend more money on streaming and digital downloads than they did on Blu-ray and DVD. That's no surprise if you're a con, isn't it? Where they said, yeah, the bottom has really fallen out of DVD and Blu-ray, and streaming has not replaced it yet.
That is correct. Yeah, that was one of the items I was going to mention, that everybody – I mean, this is – there's no-brainer here. DVD has imploded. It's cratered. They're not making as much money on DVD and Blu-ray at all. I mean, literally, it's gone from, you know, a multi-billion dollar industry to...
It used to be they'd gross more on DVD for a brief happy moment than they would at the box office.
Correct.
In North America. Now you're seeing like 10%, 20%, 30% of box office at best.
Yes, correct.
Depending, of course, on the type of movie and all that. But it's really... And so, yeah, they're spending more on streaming and digital downloads.
But they're not spending
because they're
more.
Making so little on Blu-ray and DVD, not because they're spending so much on streaming and downloads.
Right. The thing is, the DVD income that has been lost because you can now stream everything, the streaming income, the streaming revenue has not supplanted or replaced.
Pennies for dimes.
Correct. You're making... Right. Yeah. It's basically analog dollars for digital dimes.
Yes.
Or digital dimes for analog dollars.
Yeah. We'll be waiting for the autopsy report on Prince. But it's very clear now that he did die most likely from an overdose of pain pills. Kind of shocking to everybody around him because he was always no drinking, no drugs. But apparently he did have an addiction thanks to hip surgery and being in a lot of pain and probably embarrassment over feeling addicted. But he was about to get help. That's the really tragic part. He had a meeting scheduled. Friends finally tried to intervene after the collapse on the plane and blah, blah, blah. People were there to meet with him to talk about going to a recovery center. And sadly, he died that night before. So very sad news. But hopefully, if any good can come out of it, is that you'll switch from thinking of drug use as a criminal act to an addiction. It's a medical issue. And that's the best way to deal with it. And it's cost less money and it's better for everybody all around.
Well, so, especially with these opiates. We're not going to get into that here. But you know, the reality is these opiates, you take them for like an operation, as you mentioned, Michael. And the problem is that coming off of them could be more painful than the operation.
Right. And well, the real problem was that doctors were prescribing OxyContin and sort of all these other drugs hand over fist.
Yeah, they don't do that
anymore. Got a lot of people addicted. Right. The problem is when they cut off the supply of those pills, some people say, oh, these pills lead to heroin. It's like, no, they don't. They lead to addiction if you're prescribed them wrongly or over prescribed. And then when you're addicted, you will go anywhere to get more. So if you're cut off from these pills, you'll go off to somewhere else like heroin. It's not that they lead to heroin as such. It's just if you're an addict, you're going to go somewhere anywhere to relieve the pain. So that's what happened, not with Prince, but that's what's happening a lot when you see the heroin epidemic we're in. It's not because the one leads to the other. It's because if you get someone addicted and then cut off their supply, they will turn to, you know, NyQuil on the you know, alcoholics turn to NyQuil in the grocery store.
That's what I do. I'm on NyQuil. Yeah.
Hey, I used to work in a grocery store. I'd have to clean up. You'd find empty bottles in the NyQuil section.
Ugh, yikes.
Yeah, disgusting. Digital TV penetration. I'm not sure how that's defined, but it's doubled in the last 5 years, and worldwide, it's reached 75% of all households. 907 million households have digital TV, which
okay,
I guess
so,
means there's
so
about
here's
one
what
point.
That means, okay? Previously, they used to send out their television. They used to broadcast television over the air in one format, okay? Now, it's a digital format. So they basically changed the way they broadcast television. It's a technology thing. That's a technology article. That's all that is.
Okay, so it's not important.
Well, it's not that it's not important. It's that basically the way like
we're not laying cable,
right? Exactly. It's that it's no longer an analog signal. It's a digital signal. That's basically what we're saying.
One little factoid about how little we know about how much TV revenue is growing worldwide, how much money the studios and the owners of TV shows are making off these products, is that total pay TV revenue from subscriptions and pay-per-view of movies and TV episodes in 2015 was $206 billion.
Wow. Okay. Put it in perspective, the worldwide box office was like $38 billion. That's to put it
right. I mean, and of course, when you're talking about movies making a lot of money, and I say, hey, they're still making more money than ever, this is part of it. But a lot of that is also television all over the world.
Yes.
So pay TV revenue from, that means you subscribe to cable. You know, you pay $110 a month. That's part of pay TV revenue. But then there's pay-per-view, movies and TV, $200 billion. That's why they want to keep their set-top boxes. That's why they want you to keep on your $110 a month subscription rather than a
$40 skinny bundle. I wish my subscription was $110 a month.
All right. So the membership in the American Booksellers Association, it's grown for the seventh straight year.
Really?
Wonderful.
And yet I'm still not a member. I don't get it.
Well, you got to open a bookstore. 63 new stores in North America. There are now 1,775 members with 2,311 outlets. That, of course, includes Barnes & Noble. They're one member, and they have a lot of outlets, but a lot of the others are single stores. So that's good news. Hey, new stores are opening, but you've got to keep in mind that a lot of these new stores are modest little community efforts. You know, you could have 10 or 20 of them, and they would not equal the business from one Borders store.
Well, that's the same thing in the movie theater business. You have 800 independent cinemas, but you know AMC and Regal
are
the ones.
Has a 20 screener monster, yeah.
Yeah, and they're the ones that are making, you know, 50-60% of the box office for the studios.
And when you talk about growing for seven straight years, that's lovely. That's wonderful. I'm glad. I love books. I love bookstores. But we're talking about 1,775 members in 2016. That is about a third of what we had in 2002, and it's about half of what we had in 1998. 3,300 members in 1998. We're nowhere near. Bookstores are not coming back. It's a new normal. So do not get excited by somebody opening up a little collective in Brooklyn and think that you've got a new bookstore and we're back on top. It's just not ever going to be like it was. And frankly, I still wait for Barnes & Noble to go out of business too.
Well, is the BBC ever going to be the way it was? Well, I guess it's still the BBC, but is it ever going to be funded at the level it was?
That's right. There was a big white paper where it looked like the government was going to put BBC on the chopping block yet again and slash its budget. But it turns out that is not the recommendation. That's not what they're talking about. They came up with a few new suggestions, but they're hopefully going to ensure the ongoing strength of the BBC for years to come, maybe in revenue from different ways. But they have ended the freeze on the BBC license fee, which everyone with a TV pays when you're in the UK. It's about £145. That continues and it will rise with inflation. So that's a good thing, because if you lock it into place, that means you're getting a cut every year because inflation.
Yeah.
So the BBC escaped the hangman's noose, and that's good news for anybody who loves their content.
Yeah, I always feel like we're talking about the BBC's budget being cut. Every single time I hear about the BBC, it's always...
That's how the BBC feels, too.
Exactly. Now, Lee Daniels, what's the deal with him? He had to issue an apology to Sean Penn. What did he do to Sean Penn that he had to issue
an
apology?
Well, remember, he compared Sean Penn to a wife beater. And Sean Penn said, excuse me, I'm not a wife beater. I've never been, you know, I've never been charged or convicted of wife beating. I've never hit any. I don't beat people.
Only photographers.
He has hit a photographer. Yes. But let's not be flipping here. You know, Lee Daniels like, oh, please. You know, everybody knows you beat your wife, or it's been talked about for decades. So who cares if it's not true? And Sean Penn sued. And I think Lee Daniels' lawyer said, you know what? I know he's a public figure and all this and then the other thing, but he has never been charged with wife beating. He has never been convicted of wife beating. The woman you're thinking of, Madonna, released a statement saying he never hit me. So maybe it's not such a good idea. So Lee Daniels made, I want to say it's an abject apology, but it was a serious apology. You know, Sean Penn is a wonderful person. I should never have done this. And, you know, he got to the heart of it, you know, thanks to Sean Penn, and saying, look, it's gossip. I shouldn't repeat gossip. I've had stupid gossip said about me, and I shouldn't just repeat it. I know how damaging it is. He's right. I'm making a donation to the charity of his choice. And Sean Penn said, oh, Lee Daniels is a wonderful person. I'm glad we put this behind us. But I think it's just the lawyer said, look, you know, this is, you don't want to waste your time with this. And frankly, he hasn't been convicted. So maybe you should just apologize.
Well, Sean Penn will be here in Cannes later this week with a film, so he's got a filming competition.
Move forward without that hanging over him. But CAA, Can't move forward because it's still upset about the people who defected to UTA.
Well, they are moving forward. They are.
They move forward with suing. They're saying we're focused on this. We're not just saying, oh, well, you've moved on. We're saying, no, you poached people or you did things while you were here that you shouldn't have done. And they're going to pursue it in court. And the judge gave them the go ahead to move forward with that case.
Yeah. I mean, this you might recall way back, I don't know, a couple months ago, like 8 to 10 CAA agents all left for UTA at once. Of course, bringing their clients with them, CAA basically said, look, we can't keep having this happen again and again and again. So let's actually take some legal action against this happening so that maybe others.
I think they're arguing like you guys talked about it while you were here. So you're sort of conspiring to steal business from us rather than each person individual leaving and then individually working with saying, hey, client, you know, they planned it
and
brought clients with them. Rather than just leaving and then having what happened later happen.
Correct. That's generally the way it's supposed to happen. That, no, I'm leaving for UTA. And it's no shock when half the clients, if not most of the clients, follow you. Because remember, you're following the agent, not the agency. So,
or that's not what they want. So they're going to sue. Is this a big deal? Do people care about this?
It will be if it prevents mass defections of agents from one agency to another in the future. We'll see if that actually happens.
Well, that wraps up Big Deal, Big Whoop.
I noticed that you just went right past the Eurovision contest.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Eurovision. Kind of a controversial win because the song is sort of political, even though it's not explicitly political. And they've always said, no politics, please, no politics. I guess they don't want someone from Germany singing Tomorrow Belongs to Me, you know, or something like that. Who knows? Yes, so it's 1944 was the song by Jamala, a Ukrainian singer. The song obliquely of 1944. It's taken on the Russians, right?
I guess
or
so,
is it the
Germans? The
Germans.
Know. I don't know. You know what? My history in that part of the world is not very good. So my knowledge of history. So I'm going to defer to a historian.
It does refer to Soviet abuses of the Tatars in Crimea during World War II. They kill you all and say we're not guilty. Sounds like a catchy song.
Well, isn't that kind of like referencing to what's going on in the Ukraine today?
It's called 1944.
Okay, maybe it's.
Well, yes, of course it has parallels to today as well. So it's super political. Absolutely. So, but it was not a bad contest this year. They tried to create a little more suspense, and it worked.
It did
work. People didn't know who was going to win because it wasn't clear that there was another song or two that looked like they were the front runner and had more points. But the way it was done at the end, Jamala triumphed.
Yeah. And I have to say, I you know,
see you next year in the Ukraine.
Well, yes, I guess that's
depending
where
it on which country controls it.
Oh my God, I'm not touching that one. But normally on Twitter, you'll see Eurovision kind of being mocked. And this time, there were people following it. They were actually talking about it as it was going on, you know, seriously, as opposed to cracking jokes about it.
It aired for the first time in North America live on Logo, which is a gay channel. I guess Bravo lost out on it. But I don't know why somebody didn't carry it years before. But, you know, it airs at 3 in the afternoon.
Right.
They even carried it live. They didn't even say, let's put it on 8 at night. So it was fun to be able to watch it and not have to be in Europe to do so.
Yes. Well, there was no way I had time to watch it while I was here.
Of course not.
But now it's time for Inside Baseball, where we analyze some of the headlines that have the entertainment industry buzzing. We'll explain what they mean for the business and, more importantly, how they affect you. This week, we are talking about two companies, Amazon and YouTube. We've kind of been talking about them indirectly for the entire show. If, you know, we're talking about companies that are disrupting or changing the way the entertainment industry does its business.
That's right. And Amazon is going to take on YouTube. That's how everybody paints it. They have Amazon Video Direct. Basically, just like you can post videos on YouTube, Amazon is now opening up its video platform and saying, hey, post your videos. Maybe you'll make money off ads. Knock yourselves out.
Yeah, I don't think they're looking for people with cat videos. I got to be honest. I think they're really looking for filmmakers who might.
But
have...
are they curating it? Are they not letting?
No,
everybody
no, they're
just
letting
post?
Everybody post. But
yeah, so they're going to get cat videos.
Yeah, and yeah, I agree. They're also going to get you know, a bunch of creators who they have $1 million fund, and every month they're going to split $1 million between the top 100 viewed videos, so you can. As a creator.
That's a bonus, but you can still have ads as well on top of that.
Yeah, you can go to Amazon. They're opening up their platform. They're basically saying, we have an Amazon video on demand platform. We can now open that to you, the public.
To which you say, why not, right?
Yeah, you got it. You may as well, you know, you're going to get tons of garbage, but Look,
well, they don't care. They don't care. It's just like this is like their website, right? They sell stuff, and they said, "Hey, you want to sell stuff on our website? Knock yourself out."
Right?
They've got tons of third party people. They make a lot of money off third party sellers.
Absolutely. And
so they're doing the same thing. Is YouTube worried?
I don't necessarily know that they're worried, because I think that YouTube, this move by Amazon feels like it's 10 years too late, right? Because YouTube
started. Well, they didn't have the video platform as much.
Exactly. But it all, well, okay, 5 years too late, whatever you want. It feels a little too late.
Well, we'll see, I guess. But that's why they're tossing in the monthly bonus. That's why they're trying to make it sexy and fun and add a little more money. If they can offer better royalty rates, if they can offer better ad rates, if they can offer more money, they can lure people over. So now people have somewhere else to go, right?
That's right. Correct.
Right. So what is YouTube doing?
YouTube is deciding that they're going to try. Well, now, this is supposedly, okay? This is not necessarily something that is actually happening. Well, I could have written this
news
story.
Says YouTube wants to do a skinny bundle.
Right. They want to take a couple of broadcast networks, hopefully all of them, and say, okay, here you go. You can get $10 a month and you get like, here's 20 channels. Well, guess what? Okay, that's great. Everybody wants to do that. Why is this a story?
Call us when you've done it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, no, but they're really working on it now.
That's what I say to YouTube. That's what I say to Netflix. Call us when you've done it.
Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, no, but people on the inside say they're trying to do it. Yeah, so am I, okay?
So is Apple.
Yeah.
Apple, by the way, Berkshire Hathaway. I mean, I mock, savvy investor that I am. I'm like, okay, so Apple is not exploding by 30% every year. It's still a damn good business. And Berkshire Hathaway, Warren Buffett, just invested $1 billion in Apple. He said, yeah, was it T. Boone Pickens?
Yes.
Who unloaded all their stuff?
Oh, no, Carl Icahn.
Carl Icahn, yeah. It's a disaster. It's like he just wanted to cash out and wanted to have a flashy excuse for doing it. Warren Buffett said, I think it's worth buying.
Well, Warren Buffett is always, if everybody's running out of the water, he's running in.
Well, when it makes sense.
Yeah.
I don't think he says, oh, look, sharks. Let's go play.
Oh,
I don't think
my
that's
goodness.
His business plan.
No, I would agree with you.
And what's people's plan if they want to reach us?
Well, if they want to reach us, again, dirt@showbizsandbox.com is our email address. I'm sure we will be hearing from people about our little conversation earlier. dirt@showbizsandbox.com. Or you can call us. The number to call is 888-567-SAN. That number, again, is 888-567-7263. Of course, you can subscribe to the show in iTunes, the Microsoft Marketplace, the Google Play Store now, Stitcher, anywhere they give podcasts away for free. You can usually find our show, and if you do, please do subscribe to it. It does help us out, as it does when you rate and review the show. We'll actually be mentioning some names next week of people who have rated and reviewed the show on iTunes.
If you're in another country, we can't see your review. So we really realized, oh, God, people have reviewed us. And so we're going to add in some names that we forgot to check for because it's been a while. And we said, look, these people have reviewed us. But those are just North America. So if you reviewed us in England or France or Japan or Korea or Australia, send us a screen grab. Let us see what you've said and that it's on there, because then we'll mention your name, too.
Or the names of that we find on the screen grab, the screenshot.
Right.
Yeah. So also, you can follow us on Twitter @ShowbizSandbox is our username, or follow us on Facebook or like us on Facebook, which Facebook.com/ShowbizSandbox. All of those links and ways to contact us are on our website, ShowbizSandbox.com. That's where you'll find all of the links to stories we've discussed on today's show. Again, ShowbizSandbox.com is our website. The music that you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT, who have their own website, whoismgmt.com. Michael Giltz has his own website, and every week it's something new and exciting. What is it this week, Michael?
This week it's Sperling, God Only Knows What I'd Do Without You.com.
Aw, shucks.
Pet Sounds reference. Please listen to Pet Sounds and Blonde on Blonde, two of the best albums of all time.
Well, of course, if you can't find any of Michael's coverage of the entertainment industry there, and of course, his coverage is in English, you can go to the Huffington Post, or you can find it aggregated on michaelgiltz.com. Of course, you can always head on over to bookfilter.com. Some of my work can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. Some of my coverage of this year's festival can also be found on sperlingspeaks.com, where I'm aggregating it all. Until next week, play nice!
So if we want to be a big success, we need to bump up our budget to $10 million. Is that what I'm learning?
Well, we already have the English down, Pat.
I want a raise.
Apparently, we don't have the French down at all.
I want a raise.
Okay, 100% raise.
Yes.